And just confirming that you're recording video to use for social purposes, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great.
No cursing.
Oh, no, you can curse on this podcast.
No, you're fine. You can curse. We're good.
I can?
It's totally fine. It's cool.
That's so fucking great.
We curse all the time.
I don't. Only when I'm angry. Really angry.
So, a funny thing happened a few weeks ago. The new season of Somebody Feed Phil dropped on Netflix, and we did what we usually do. We watched it, we loved it, and we recorded a podcast about it and put it out into the ether. Somehow, Phil, the one that somebody feeds on that show, came across our podcast, liked it, and then reached out and said he'd like to talk to us. After a brief period in which Bahir and I lost our collective minds, after we'd calmed down, we replied to his DMs, and the result of which is what you're about to hear. So here you have it, folks. Phil Rosenthal on the Goggler Podcast.
Here we are.
Here we are. Phil, it is an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, my friend. I'm going to turn you sideways so I can really see. Are you recording video as well?
Yes, we are.
So people see me like this?
People see you like this in your t-shirt.
Is this a flattering angle or should I do something?
It's a perfect angle.
That works. Yeah.
We don't have your crack production crew with us today. So obviously.
Neither do I.
Hey, so we were, first of all, thank you so much for doing this.
First of all, let me say something to you.
Go on.
I read stuff and I hear stuff about the show and I don't honestly remember how I came across your podcast. But you guys were so sweet and so, you know, you hope when you make something that someone out there will get it. And I was just so touched and so honored that on the other side of the world, you get it.
Oh, thank you. Sweet, Phil. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nice to hear. Yeah.
We won't lie. We've been obsessed with the show since season one. Like
wow.
Like, and even some of the PBS stuff, we don't even get PBS in Malaysia. I had to go look for it.
How'd you find it?
There are ways.
Wow. I guess there are.
We Malaysians, we're very... Yeah, there are ways. So let me tell you this. We were putting together... Obviously, you know, we had a Google Doc. Bahir and I had a Google Doc and we were... oh, by the way, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Uma, by the way, and that's Bahir.
Hi, Uma.
Hi.
We had a Google Doc and we were like, you know, putting down stuff we wanted to talk to you about. And it ended up being this thing of every question we've ever wanted to ask Phil Rosenthal. So
all right, I'm here for you.
If you will forgive us, we might be jumping around a bit.
You do whatever you want. I'm used to all the jumping.
Excellent. If you can tell by looking at us, we clearly are best described as eaters and not foodies. And I wanted to start by asking if you describe yourself in any way, because after doing this for so long, I imagine you would have kind of developed a philosophy on eating and food.
Yes, I'm somewhere between an eater and a foodie.
Right.
Right? I think a foodie is really like an obsessive, maybe. I do love it, but for me, it's. I always say food is the great connector and then laughs are the cement.
Yeah.
So I'm only using it to get to you, to get to the person that I'm going to have lunch with. And for me, lunch is like this important tent pole in the middle of my day. Everything is leading up to this wonderful break. And then I really, really enjoy. And this is something I learned from my first travels when I was in my early 20s, where if you've ever been to Europe, I don't know what it's like in Malaysia. Does the country shut down in the afternoon for people to take a break?
No,
not really.
No, but we love our food.
We don't have siestas or...
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you've ever experienced it, at first you're like, what the hell? Why can't I buy a shirt at 2:00? What's going on? Don't these people, are they crazy? Don't they want to make a living? And then you realize, oh, after you're there another day or two, oh, they want to enjoy the day. What a novel concept, right? And so I started having, at an early age, Lunch is so important. Lunch with a friend is so great, something to look forward to in the day. I love dinner too. I even love breakfast. But there's something about taking that time in the day for the big meal.
No, I get that.
I love it.
Not eating in front of your laptop, not eating in front of your desk. I mean, it's a thing. We know you've spoken about this before, but we were curious about how you got this show started, and how did you convince PBS and then Netflix to go, hey, I've done this show called Everybody Loves Raymond. Was it easy because you've done 9 seasons?
It was so easy. Yes, so easy. You know what? If you go into your agent's office after having made a sitcom that was somewhat successful, and you tell them, you know what? Now I would like to do a food and travel show. They look at you as if you just pooped on their desk. They are not excited for this idea. These shows don't make money. Why would you ever think that we'd be interested in helping you to throw money away? And it took me 10 years. 10.
Wow.
What? 10. People did not care that I had had a successful sitcom. This is like now saying, hey, I used to be a baseball player, and now I'd like to be a heart surgeon.
Right.
Right? They don't welcome you right away. So I had to prove myself by making little videos, and I got one gig maybe for American Express where I went and did a card member experience. I went with a famous chef to London. And I thought, oh, that's going to be the pilot for a series. No, it was just a card member experience, a one-time thing. But I took clips from that and I put a sizzle reel together of the show that I wanted to do. And I started like a traveling salesman. When I said to my agents, let's go to PBS, that was the first place I thought, because first of all, I was, I think, about 50. I said, let's go there. I'll be the young buck on PBS. I'll be the stud on PBS. And they said, you're not going to PBS. Why not? They don't have any money. Why would you go there? I mean, it's bad enough you want to do it this, but that's like the bottom of the money barrel. I said, I'm telling you, I think it would go there. They said, you're not doing that. You're going to, we're going to Travel Channel first, which was, you know, at 10 years ago. They were the Travel Channel. But we go in, and the president of the Travel Channel actually said this to me. Have you heard this before?
No.
Okay. Head of the Travel Channel says, I got to tell you, we've done some research, and we found that our audience doesn't really like travel. I said, oh, my. What are you going to do?
We're going to do Cribs is what we're going to do.
Travel adjacent. That's exactly right. Travel adjacent. I said, what the hell does that mean? He said, well, like this year, we have a new show called Pimp My RV.
No way.
I said, oh. He says, you understand? I said, I think I do. You pimp an RV and then you don't go anywhere. Yeah. It's all about the pimping. I said, tell me about it.
I feel like you've encountered this many times. Like, Bahir and I really love Exporting Raymond. And it's like talking to that guy at the museum, and he's like, yeah, it's all about style, man. It's all about style.
That's right. Style over substance.
Right.
That's it. The box that the thing comes in is more important than the thing. I just never understood it. I never understood it when people tell me, you know, the 4-camera sitcom, nobody wants to see those. I said, you're blaming the form? Maybe it's the content. So I leave the Travel Channel. On my way out the door, he says, oh, just another bit of research that might be useful to you. We found that the only food that Americans are interested in is barbecue. I said, okay, thanks. I say to my execs at the elevator, the guys from the agency, can we go to PBS now? No. There's still a lot more places before them. So we're going to the Food Network.
Right.
Go to the Food Network. Guess what? They're owned by the same people who own the Travel Channel. And the first thing the guy says to me is, we're kind of getting away from the food thing. Yeah, we do food adjacent. Literally said the same word. I said, "Yeah." So everybody's adjacent? Nobody's on anything? And he said, and the only food that we found that Americans are interested in, said, don't tell me. I just visited your neighbor. I know. And I left. Now, can I go to PBS? No, I had to go to every cable station. All were turned down. I got to PBS and they said, what is the show? Who are you? And what I said, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain if he was afraid of everything. And they said, oh, they got it. We've been looking for a food and travel show with humor for years. So after 10 years of trying to get it on, I was suddenly in the right place at the right time.
That's amazing.
Okay. Hmm. And so we did 6 for them. We won the James Beard Award for best travel show. And then they couldn't afford to do anymore. And thank God Netflix came along. And so I've been there.
It's amazing.
I was rewatching season 1 of Somebody Feed Phil. And the thing that struck me the most is how from your pilot episode to the last episode of season 5, everything feels so locked in. It feels like you've got the episode down from the get-go. And that's something that we rarely see, even especially because your show is kind of loosey-goosey. You talk to the crew, you talk to the cameraman, you talk to your producer. How did you guys get that from the get-go? I mean, is there a disaster secret pilot episode somewhere in a vault?
It's that American Express one.
Right.
That I did. And I had a producer on that. I didn't know any better. I didn't know what it was going to be. So, but I had a feeling of the kind of thing I wanted to do, but I didn't realize that this producer, he had produced many, many food shows. And so for him, it was only about the food.
Right.
So in other words, if the three of us were sitting at a table over lunch, he would have 4 cameras all pointed at the food. And lucky if he got any of us talking. Okay. He booked us into 27 restaurants in 7 days.
Wow.
That's more than breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it got to the point where, you know, the phrase, careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
When food comes, you want to say, oh boy, not oh no.
Right.
And it became oh no for me. And worse than that, the chef I was with was a 4-star chef. And so we were booked into the fanciest white tablecloth restaurants where meals could go 4 or 5 hours each. And I wanted to die. And I hated everything about this thing, even though it was my dream to do this. I'm like, this, but here's the thing. You learn just as much from what to do as you do from not to do. So it was such a lesson. And from that disaster, there were a couple of scenes that I could cobble together where I insisted on taking the 4-star chef to Borough Market.
Right.
Nice.
And having a grilled cheese and having, you know, things that he's not used to. Those were the best scenes.
Yeah.
So of course I remember this. I also remembered you don't want to co-host with you because now you're talking to that one person every scene, instead of meeting the chef or a person sitting at the bar or somebody else. That's what I wanted. I also knew from Exporting Raymond, if you saw that movie, you know that quite by accident, I stumbled upon let's Skype with my parents.
Right. So that's where it came from.
Of course. That became the funniest scene in the movie, the best scene in the movie. So I come from sitcoms. I like when we have funny characters. My parents happen to be really, really funny. And there was an organic way to put it in the food and travel show because the Zoom or the Skype home is the postcard now.
Yeah.
Right? So there was a natural thing. It also suddenly now, if you do it at the same point in every show, right before the last scene, you now have something of a structure.
Mm.
And the more structure you can impose underneath when nobody really, you know, without acknowledging it ever, that structure always strengthens the show. It's like the frame of a building. So we have this structure. How will the people who don't know me from being behind the camera my whole career, they don't know me. How will they get to know me? What if I talk to them? Remember Annie Hall?
Yeah.
Remember Woody Allen starts the movie by talking to the camera?
Yeah.
Why don't I try that? And then we can cut to that whenever we want. And you can have my thoughts. We film those segments all at once on the last day of filming so that I have it fresh in my head. We do it at the location in the hotel. We have the same backdrop. I wear the same shirt. And I just go through and They prompt me from behind the camera, Richard and the director. They tell me, okay, now talk about this. I said, what did I eat there again? Oh, yeah.
Right. And also it gives you a little bit of space to kind of
digest it. Maybe I'll think of something funny, maybe or not, but nothing is written until after. After, in editing, when you're making documentaries, the writing comes in the editing. Now we're shaping it. So you probably won't see scenes that are too similar, even though, like, let's say you're in Maine, there's going to be lobster. There'll be more than one lobster because you're in the place where lobsters are, right? In Oaxaca, there's going to be mole, more than one. The trick is to vary it up. Then you have to cut the stuff that's too similar. But there's a shape to the show. If it's a place I've been, the beginning is, can't wait to show you this place that I know. Maybe I'll discover some new thing. If there's a place I don't know, I'm starting out. Maybe I don't even like it. Maybe, like, I don't know if you saw the Tokyo show of the first series.
Yeah.
I go to Tokyo. I'm like, what the hell is this place? It's like I'm in a pinball machine. Maybe I go sit in my hotel. I felt that way, like nervous and out of place until I ate my first meal. And then I got it. Oh, my God, it's gorgeous. The whole message of that show is we can't control, right? We can't control how crazy the world is, how crazy the city is, how crazy life is. But what we can control in the Japanese culture, we make perfect and beautiful.
Yeah.
What a lesson that is, right? That's what you get from traveling.
You know, Phil, there was one bit in the new season. I think Bayer and I were just blown away by this little bit. It's when you're speaking to the prime minister and...
Oh, come on.
And it looks like someone gave you wrong information about her baking.
That's right.
Or about her liking to bake. And
exactly right. That happens all the time.
The way you played that off, like, as people who kind of do interviews for a living, we just thought that was masterful and magical. And
oh, thank you.
There was something about, I think it's in your enthusiasm, it's in your character, and it felt natural. It, you know, it didn't feel like anyone was going to lose their jobs.
There's no acting on the show, first of all. And people say, do you have outtakes? I said, they're in the show.
Right.
Oh, the boom is in the show. Okay. At some point, the director called out. We were in the middle of a scene. Oh, somebody walked by with the boom. I'm like, yeah, they know we're making a show. And I kept that in.
And we know where all that extra food goes as well.
You do. First of all, there's two reasons. There's two reasons for that. One is it's only fun if you can share it. It's only good if you can share it. I have like 16 people standing around watching me like this as I'm eating the most delicious things in the world. It'd be cruel not to share it with them, and I want to share it with them. Second, if I didn't share it with them, I'd be 400 pounds.
Wait, so this brings me to the question that I had, because you look like you, and you're not messing about on these shows. You're eating the food. You're not taking a bite and then feigning enthusiasm. How? What is the strategy for eating? Like, how many places do you guys go in a day?
Right. Okay. So from that terrible thing of 27 meals, I thought, here's how you do it. 2 places maximum per day. We film 6-7 days in each city. Okay. So yes, I know it looks like what a pig Phil is. Can you believe how much he eats? But you're seeing a week's worth of filming condensed into less than an hour, right? So if you see a scene where I eat a lot, that's probably all I ate that day. You know how they make a dog food commercial? They don't feed the dog until the commercial.
Yeah.
So I'm the dog. I don't eat until, this is one reason I'm very enthusiastic, because I'm hungry. anything you gave me, you're going to get somewhat of a good reaction. And then when it turns out to be one of the most delicious things in the world,
I think doing something like this day in, day out, I'm curious as to whether or not it makes you more or less of a food snob. God knows we hate the guy who's just come back from Italy and insists on saying Parmigiano every time he wants like a grate of cheese, right?
The only word that has an accent is Parmigiano.
Correct.
Yeah.
Or who gets angry or who keeps correcting you by going bruschetta. I mean, you know, we hate that guy. But
Yeah, please be quiet. Yeah.
What do you like these days? Because you've had the best lobster. You've had the best of everything.
I'm so grateful for it. I realize it's like unbelievable privilege to get to do this, right? So like tonight, my son just texted me, what do you want for dinner? I don't care. I've had many, many, many great meals. I can have a hot dog. I can be totally happy. We can order pizza. I don't care. Would I like the pizza to be good? Yes. Right? But it doesn't have to be the best pizza in the world. I know where that is. And sometimes I can go get it. But if I never had another bite of world-class food, it might be a little sad, but I think I've had more than my fair share. So my whole message to you and to anyone watching or listening is the point of the show is for you to do it. If this putz can go outside, maybe you can too.
No, your show was a shining beacon during lockdown, let me tell you.
Oh, thank you.
We were stuck here, and I think when we got that notification from Netflix, like season four, we're like, oh my God, this is amazing.
I think we didn't do any work that day. I think we just like, nope, it's the Phil Rosenthal day off.
Oh, so we're just gonna put that on. Makes me feel so good. I have to be honest, I was a little worried during COVID that people maybe don't want to be reminded that they can't go somewhere. But then it was the complete opposite, which was delightful that the show provided at least a respite from being enclosed.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you this as well, Phil. I don't know if you're aware. There is a massive rivalry between Malaysia and Singapore.
I didn't know that. And I just had a wonderful Malaysian meal two nights ago.
Oh, nice.
With some friends.
Oh, nice.
I had the privilege of eating with Michelle Yeoh.
Well, we were just going to say, she is one of our national treasures.
I know.
She's gone to Hollywood and done good.
She is an international treasure. She is now a good friend of mine. I can honestly say that. I've only known her about a month or two. By the way, you saw the new movie?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Amazing.
Twice. Isn't it one of the best movies ever? I saw it twice too.
Yeah.
We can't tell you how proud we are of her. Like, we're just so happy.
People everywhere just go insane when they see her because she is, I guess, the biggest female action star in the world.
And she does it all herself.
She's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And the loveliest, sweetest. Have you ever met her?
No.
I have. Yeah.
I think Bahe has. Bahe used to be in like production and film and all of that stuff.
Yeah, yes. I used to be. Yeah.
So am I lying? She's like the sweetest person.
Absolutely ever. Sweetest. Yeah.
Her and her co-star, Ki Kwan, her husband in the movie. We've also become friends. I love these people. They are so great.
What did you have to eat?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that.
So a very rich person wanted to honor her. He's like a jeweler. He gave her a Rolex watch.
Right.
I don't know why, other than she's the national treasure of Malaysia.
It happens.
And
yeah.
Honored her at a banquet, a Malaysian banquet, where the chef was Malaysian. They brought in another chef from Las Vegas who's Malaysian, and they did it up. I'll send you some photos of this thing. Wow, wow, wow.
I bring that up because
I want to come. The short answer is I want to come.
Well, that's the question, right? We know, like you've said in interviews before, that you really want to do India. And I figure you're going to do that. And you know what? We're 3 hours away.
It could be a 1-2. That's how we do it.
It could be a 1-2.
If we're in the neighborhood, we knock off the other one right after.
I say the rivalry between Malaysia and Singapore because the rivalry runs particularly deep when it comes to food. because in our heads, whatever they can do, we can do better. And but also, I think, and you may have encountered this maybe in one or two countries, but Malaysia is one of those places where as soon as we're done with breakfast, we're talking about what we're going to have for lunch.
Yes. Here's what I want to tell you. You know who else does that? Everybody. You go to China. Oh, nobody eats like us. Oh, you go to the South of America.
Yeah.
Oh, nobody eats like us. Now you're really going to eat. You go to Italy. Oh, you better kill us if you don't want any more because we're going to give it to you. Oh, you go to Greece. Oh, and now you're going to eat. You go to Jewish person's home. Oh, you won't believe how much food we are.
But hey, we really need to get out more.
We need to get out. Yeah.
It seems to be the universal thing. People like to eat. And we often are, while we're eating lunch, we're talking about dinner.
But no, you got to come here, man. Like, we got great street food. We got great high-end food.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I've learned from watching you do this, and the thing that I've kind of adopted into my everyday life, is to remind myself to always stay excited and to allow myself to be surprised by things. And I was wondering if there was one big takeaway from your years doing this show, traveling the world, meeting all these people, eating all of this food, what would it be?
There's no more mind-expanding thing we can do in life than travel. It literally changes your perspective. Yes, I want you to go and I want you to represent your family, your hometown, your country in a respectful, nice way. That's what you need to give when you go. But what you're going to get back is priceless. And that is your perspective on life will change for the better. And appreciation, not just for other people and other cultures, but it literally makes you appreciate what you have at home even more. I'll give you an example. I go to Paris for the first time when I'm 23. I get a free flight, courier flight, and I go. And my mind is blown. I can't believe, look at these trees on the street. Look how gorgeous this, look at how they take care of the, oh my God. And then I eat and then I go insane and oh my God. And the people are so great. The place is so beautiful. And I swear to you, when I came home to kind of a low rent part of Manhattan, Washington Heights, I suddenly noticed the trees on my street. Hmm. Oh, we have nice trees too. I never looked at them. But because I had that experience, now I looked at the trees in my yard and my street. That's what travel does. When I had the bowl of khao soi in Chiang Mai, the very first thing I did after eating two full bowls of, I was in chair, everybody get your own. It's one of the best things I ever ate in my life. And by the way, it's a dollar.
Yeah.
Okay. The first thing I did when I was in the car going back to my hotel was Google khao soi Los Angeles.
Were you successful?
Oh, yeah. Los Angeles is one of the best cities in the world to eat. Why? Because the whole world is here. We have more people, more groups of people outside their native homelands than anywhere else in the world. So the biggest collection of Thai people, the biggest collection of Chinese people outside of China, biggest collection of Ethiopian people. I could go on and on. Korean people, Mexican people. And they all bring their cuisines with them. And when you couple that with the fantastic produce that we have available, the whole game is elevated. And they all get influenced by each other. So you see these great mashups of them, right? Have you been here yet?
I've done LA.
Yes, you like it?
Oh, I love it. I went scouring the city for food trucks. And God, have you got some great food trucks.
Pretty great. Hold on one second, you guys. I just have to text my son one second go over and tell him to order the Mexican food. Done. Okay, we're here. We're back.
I was thinking about your time in network television, and it feels like the years you've spent doing this. Am I right in thinking it's just a lot less stressful?
This show? Oh, well, yeah. You see me having a good time on the show? You know why? I'm having a good time. They say, you look like you're happy all the time. Yeah, I'm really happy when I'm doing the show. I get frustrated and angry and upset with the world like everybody else. But when I'm doing this, I'm the luckiest guy you're ever going to talk to. That's honestly how I feel. And that's how I approach the show. And when there are little annoyances like, oh, they lost my luggage or whatever, you got to remind yourself, wait, look what you get to do. Right?
Who needs luggage? I've got churros.
That's right. That's right.
So I've got a serious question for you, Phil. No, I mean, you did the show, and for so many years, your parents were such an integral part of it. And we mentioned this in the podcast, both Bahir and I, my wife, we were all absolutely devastated when they passed. And we don't know you, thanks, but we had that emotional connection. And
yes,
I was wondering for you if that changed your approach to the show, because you're not going to be able to talk to them at the end of every episode anymore.
First, my mom passed from a terrible thing called ALS. That was awful. I mean, it's not a tragedy when an 86-year-old woman passes, but no one should have to suffer like that at the end of their life. Like, why did I come all this way for this, right? This should not be the end of anybody's life. So I've dedicated a good part of the rest of mine to helping with ALS and whatever else I can help with. But my dad was left alone. I mean, for 2 years, he didn't have the best time. And 1.5 of those years was COVID. So we couldn't even go visit. So I didn't enjoy any of that stuff. He was fine emotionally, or at least he hit it well. And one of the things I did was just to stay connected to him and keep him active was a joke that he would do at the end of every episode. My wife was sweet enough to go be with him during those times for the most part. And it became, I think, the best part of the show. That them in the show was the best part of the show. I can tell you this. One thing I wanted to do immediately was a tribute episode to them. And you will see that in the next season.
Oh, lovely.
We made that show. And it's their greatest hits and a few outtakes and a little bit of their history. And I think it's the best episode we've done yet because they are great.
Yeah.
And I think you'll love it. And the other thing I could do on a episode by episode basis was honor the spirit of them and their humor, especially my dad's, by calling my famous comedian friends and having them do a joke for Max. I didn't know how it would go over with the audience, but the response I've gotten is so sweet and so great. And I thought of it right away that this would be a beautiful way to keep the spirit alive. You know, we stay alive as long as we're remembered.
Yeah.
Right? And so every show, they're remembered in a very sweet, funny way, the way they'd like to be. Not with the dark crying scene, but with a joke.
So, we don't know your dad, and we've just met, but Bahir and I, we have a joke for Max, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, I love it. Go ahead, please.
So stop us if you heard this before, but...
I probably have, but go ahead.
Yeah, probably, but...
I'm going to let you do it. Why? It's your show.
I forget he's a comedy writer, Bahir. He's heard all of
I know. There was a test. We had to, yeah, no.
I swear to you, I'll be honest.
So, a man wakes up with a horrible hangover. Oh, man.
No, go ahead. God
dang it.
So, a man wakes up with a horrible hangover and a throbbing black eye, right? And the first thing he sees on his bedside table is a single rose and a note from his wife. And it says, "Darling, breakfast is made. I've gone shopping to make you your favorite dinner tonight. I love you." He then stumbles into the kitchen. Sure enough, there's breakfast. "Hey," he says to his son, "what happened last night?" "Well, Dad, you came home totally soused and you got that black eye tripping over a chair." And so he goes, "Why the rose, breakfast, and the sweet note from your mother?" And the son says, "Oh, that. Mom dragged you to the bedroom, and when she tried to take off your clothes, you screamed, 'Get your hands off me, I'm married.'" We thought that was food. We thought it was a bit of a wife joke, and we thought your dad might appreciate that.
And a little bit of a husband joke.
Yes, absolutely.
But wouldn't... I'm now going to play comedy writer.
Go
for it. I'm going to be very annoying.
Go for it. This is what we love.
Isn't the question to the son, why the black eye? And the answer is what you said to her. That's why you got a black eye. You didn't trip over a couch. She gave you a black eye. Isn't that when you said that, "Get your hands off me," right? Am I wrong?
Yes, because
yes,
"Get your hands off me, I'm married" was proof that he wasn't going to let some other woman undress him. So the wife was really,
I missed the joke completely.
Oh, no.
I'm an idiot.
But now you think it's funny.
This is okay. So now you talked about, are you a food snob? Are you this or that? So knowing too much about comedy, right? Having done it my entire life has now ruined me for some jokes where right away I hear it and I start trying to fix it or overthink it. I'm a moron. Thank you for teaching me a lesson.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that for a second.
I thought the joke was good. I like you think you know where the joke is going. It's actually a much sweeter joke. And I'm used to it being, you know, she belted you. It's the opposite. We're not used to jokes like that here.
Trust me, it's very difficult finding a sweet joke these days.
that is a sweet joke.
It's a sweet joke.
But you completely, my expectations were so unmet that I thought there was something wrong with the joke. I swear to God. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I like that we tricked Phil. Yeah, I feel that's made sure
we did. Yes. I'm not saying that my way isn't funnier, but but it's a delightful, it's a lovely, sweet joke.
Hey, Phil, just to go off topic for a little bit, I'm curious, was there ever, and I don't know if I missed it, but like in Malaysia, everyone was obsessed with Everywhere I Love Raymond, right?
Nice.
We used to get it, it was syndicated. We used to get it on our cable. Like it used to play every day.
Still available?
Probably is. We hardly watch cable, but probably is. It probably plays every day still. But was there ever a talk of like doing a Brad spinoff or...
Yes,
there was
right away.
Oh, I would imagine so.
That was the spinoff that I told CBS. I have a spinoff. It's Brad's character is married to Monica, who happens to be my wife in real life. And you know, in season 7, I believe we introduced her family before they got married. Great cast. Chris Elliott played her brother. Fred Willard played her father, and Georgia Engel played her mother. These are sitcom veterans, and they were great, and they were about 30 episodes. So proof of concept was already done.
Right.
CBS said, you can do a pilot. I said, a pilot? I did 30 pilots with them, right? They were in 30 episodes. Pilot is to prove the concept, right? I've already proven it. I was going to have Brad and Monica move to Pennsylvania, where they live, and he was going to have to... He was going to be retired from the police force, and he was going to have to work as a gym coach in the junior high that Fred Willard is the vice principal of, right? So that was going to be the premise of the show. They said, you can do a pilot. I'm like, you don't understand. All the writers of Raymond, which is the main reason that I wanted to do a spinoff to begin with, was to stay with these great sitcom writers. Because we, you know, after 9 years, we're pretty good. That comes around once in a lifetime, this staff. They're all getting multi-million dollar offers to go do their own sitcoms. So you can't just offer me a pilot because we're going to lose these people. And they said, sorry, that's it. Everyone in your show is over 40.
Wow. Yeah,
and that's all we're interested in. So, okay, that was the end of that. But it led me here.
And it led you to us, which is fantastic. But I don't know how much TV you still get to watch, but I think one of the things that Bahir and I still lament is it feels like the 30-minute sitcom is dying, or there's so few of it that's great. And I was wondering...
Yeah. Again, it's not the form, it's the content.
And I was wondering, the family sitcom, what's missing?
Why is it not
a staple? Good.
It's because the people in charge don't value it, and they don't realize that the family sitcom has been the building block of television since the beginning of television. But it's not hip and cool.
Mm.
The individual executives want hip and cool and young on their resumes, their personal resumes. They don't want the show that might be kind of nice or broadly appealing. They actually want the cool thing that the papers are going to write about. They have a point. I don't think we ever got like a major story in a major newspaper. I can count the number of covers of magazines on one hand in the 9 years. We got the cover of Entertainment Weekly once, and that was when we went off the air. It just shows you, but we lived through at the same time as Sex and the City was on. They were on the cover of everything. They had maybe 2 million people watching it a week, and we had about 20, 30 million.
Wow.
But they don't care. It's not the cool thing.
Hey, look at it this way, though. I mean, Phil, and I don't mean this in an insulting way, but somebody feed Phil, not really cool and hip, but it's kind, it's wonderful, it's smart, it's funny, and I think the content speaks for itself, right? Like, I feel like you are of the mindset of if you build it and you build it well, they will come.
I think so, but it took a few seasons now. Netflix, to be fair, had enough after the first two seasons. And I had to figure out a way to keep it going, knowing that from where I come from, the longer you last, if you can just get over a certain hump of time, the audience will know you. And if you do your job, they will like the show and then want more. But you have to give something a chance. So we figured out a way to help Netflix with the show and produce the show for cheaper. And that was what was able to let us get this far. And now I believe we're the number one food and travel show in the world.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. It does not mean that my future is secure.
Right.
Not in any way.
So here's what you can tell them. The American exchange rate is incredibly strong right now. And so therefore, India and Malaysia will be remarkably cheap.
Good. Music to their ears.
This is a great way. You know, Phil, before we let you go, we just got a couple of quick fires for you. And I'm sure you've spent lots of time thinking about this, but last meal, what would it be?
I have been asked this before. In fact, I think it's in the London episode. Jay Rayner asked me. I have thought about it. I believe that it will be childhood favorites to complete the cycle. What does that mean for me? Pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, fried chicken, right? A lot of chocolate. And then I probably would, the last bite would be my mom's matzo ball soup.
Very nice.
Right?
Has there ever been anything you've been presented with that just made you go, nope?
It's in the Oaxaca episode. Have you seen that one yet?
Yeah.
Yes.
You saw it. I don't want to ruin it for people, but if you want to see that moment, I literally had to say no.
Okay. Worst thing that you've ever eaten?
I've said this many times. It's the one that comes to the front of my mind. It's the 1,000-year-old egg in Hong Kong.
Right. Mm.
This is meant to be taken in tiny slivers and put into a hot pot with
porridge.
30 other ingredients. Yeah. And I took an entire half a hard-boiled 1,000-year-old egg and popped it in my mouth all at once.
I feel like that was your mistake.
The first thing you hear on the soundtrack is my brother behind the camera laughing because it tastes like really, really, really rotten egg and then a tsunami of ammonia.
Oh.
So here's the thing.
We called it cat pee egg.
We think you should try it again, but with Chinese porridge, it is just, it accentuates the flavor with the sesame oil.
I understand.
Oh, it's very
good. But with a tiny bit. I get it.
Like a little bit.
But once you've had, like, I don't know if you've ever gotten physically ill from a meal.
Yeah.
You don't want that meal again. You don't care how it's prepared. You recognize that flavor at all. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm afraid 1,000-year-old, I could be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong. I had an opportunity to have it again, not on the show, but somewhere else. And I was like, hard pass.
So you've got the book coming out.
Yes!
Season 6 is coming out.
It comes out in the fall. You can pre-order it now.
I already have.
It's doing great. You did?
On Amazon, yep.
What's great about it is it's called Somebody Feed Phil the Book. It's a companion book. Behind the scenes photos, beautiful photos, stories from me. And then the best part, the 60 most requested recipes from the audience from the first 4 seasons. So it's probably the best cookbook in the world because it's so diverse and has everything from the simplest thing to a recipe from Massimo Bottura from the best restaurant the world, a thing like it's pages. I put it in as almost a joke. I mean, I should have a contest. Anybody who makes this thing, first of all, I'm going to tell Massimo, and you could probably get a job at Osteria Francescana in Modena. But I mean, you're going to be somewhat famous if you could make this
thing. I will say this: challenge accepted.
Are you a chef?
No, but I enjoy cooking and I do baking on the side. So I will try it, and Bahir and I will video it and send it to you. I don't even know what it is.
It's the 5 ages of Parmigiana in different textures and temperatures.
Okay, this might be a little hard, but good, you know, luck. What?
Good luck.
We'll try it. We'll try it.
You might need an entire laboratory kitchen to make this work. It's in the show. It's in the show. It's in the Venice episode. We go take a side trip to Modena. That dish is in the show.
So season 6 is coming up. And are you allowed to tell us if season 7 has been given a go ahead?
We haven't yet.
Okay.
I can tell you that we haven't. I think they're waiting to see the numbers, like after a month of being on this time, maybe. I mean, if they wanted to, they could say we're going to even wait for season 6 to see if you get if you can start going. We'd like to get on the road by the end of August so that we and the audience don't have to wait 2 years between shows, right? But they have a lot of shows, Netflix, so I understand. They have a lot of things. Can I plug my podcast?
Please.
Naked Lunch with David Wilde, a writer for Rolling Stone. By the way, we just did an interview with Michelle Yeoh and Ki Kwan.
We've heard it. Yeah.
You heard it already.
I'm assuming the title comes from the Burroughs, Naked Lunch.
That's right.
Okay, cool.
That's right.
Cool. Phil, it's been a pleasure. And you know what? When August rolls around, when they give you the green light for Kuala Lumpur, we will hook you up.
That'd be awesome.
We know people.
I hope we do it.
We know chefs. We will hook you up. And it'll be amazing.
Do you know the tourism board?
We have ways.
We can get to know the tourism board.
All right. If you connect me with them, I'm happy to talk to them. And I'll pass them on to Richard, who will start the conversation.
Oh, for sure. We will find you someone reliable and smart.
Oh, good, because all I have is Richard.
Fantastic. Well, it's been a pleasure, Phil. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. I love meeting you guys, and I like people who are drilled down to the details, because that's everything, right? The more specific you get, the more universal it is. That's I really believe that. So I like that you're picking out tiny, tiny things.
But hey, I feel like we need to record that clip and then play it back for our wives.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if that would get us.
Who may not always appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yes, you're annoying to them.
Absolutely. Yes.
But to me, I love you.
Thank you so much. Well, we love you too.
This has been an honor, Phil.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Keep doing what you're doing because it really brightens up our world. Thank you so much.
When I heard your initial podcast, there was a young lady on the show as well.
Yes.
Who was that?
So Karen is one of our writers. She really wanted to be here today, but she's had a death in the family and she had to fly back to India, where she's from.
Oh my goodness. My condolences. She had just started, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, she had just started watching the show?
Yes. So we introduced her to the show. We made her watch select episodes and then season 5.
Wow.
And you know, she's 21 years old, she's young, and you know, she likes she likes the dark stuff. So we weren't sure if all of this light and joy would appeal to her, but it did. And we're so glad.
Oh, I'm so glad. All right. Please, my condolences to her and love to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Phil, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was Phil Rosenthal. All 5 seasons of his brilliant show, Somebody Feed Phil, is available to stream on Netflix. His podcast, Naked Lunch, which he does with David Wilde, is available from everywhere you get your podcasts. And he's also got a book coming out in October, Somebody Feed Phil, the book, which you can pre-order on Amazon. Don't forget to talk to us about how much you love the show. You can also reach out on all of our social media feeds on GogglerMY. You can email us on podcast@goggler.my or send us a WhatsApp on the Goggler hotline 012-524-5208. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Goggler Podcast.